Welcome to Intentional Growth, a show that teaches you as a business owner and entrepreneur to view and run your company like a financial asset, which will allow you to enjoy work, create wealth, and make an impact. This mindset will help you focus on building a more valuable business and give you the choices to grow, acquire, reinvest, or exit and live the life you plan for, all with intention. And now here's your host, Ryan Tansom.
So you ever got done with an executive meeting or a strategic planning session or you went to a conference or trade show or you talked to someone, you have a bunch of ideas and they're very clear to you of like why this would be a good opportunity for you in the business and you feel really good about investing or moving that direction. You get back to your office and going, I have no idea how we're going to fund this. How we're going to judge the return on this investment or these strategies, how it's going to impact cash flow today, my ability to take the distributions that I want, pay the taxes that I need to pay so I don't have to take out a loan to pay my taxes, and how are these strategies going to impact the cash flow today and the future value of the company? So you sit there and you go, well, I know I need to know those things, but I don't have the right information. So I'm going to go on my gut, or I'm going to fly by the seat of my pants, or I'm just going to trust my 30 years of experience in this industry to make the decision because I know I don't have all the information, but I know it's the right decision. The amount of anxiety and stress that comes with going that direction, been there, done that more times than I can count. But the thing is, what if you had the financial data and the understanding of the trade-offs of your decisions and the impact on cash and the future value of the company? That is exactly why we're doing this mini-series on the role of a CFO as a guide in value creation and M&A, because the CFO's role is to take the operations of the company and the future strategy of the company and to view the company as an asset and how it impacts cash and how it impacts the future value of the company. Their job is to manage the CPA firm, the banking relationship, a lot of times oversee HR compliance and a lot of pricing and sales and comp plans, insurance, legal, the amount of stuff that they're the glue around is so that way the owner and CEO can get the information and essentially have to choose your own adventure of the financials in front of them is so crucial to reduce that anxiety and get that clarity. And so what we're going to be doing in this episode is Pat Hobby and I, my partner, are going to be breaking down what the different functions are inside of an accounting and finance department, because the amount of times, and I'm guilty if I were to go back 10 years ago, well, my finance or accounting people are going to be taking care of that. And like, what do you mean by that? Bookkeeper, staff accountant, controller, CFO, CPA. And people go, I don't know, just my finance people. I know that's not everybody, but I hear that a lot. So we're going to, the first about 20 to 30 minutes, we're going to build up to so that way people understand the functions of a business as it relates to the accounting and finance department, how that goes to bookkeepers, the roles and responsibilities of a controller, and then ultimately what the CFO is responsible for, and then how they glue the whole thing together with the picture of value creation as the financial asset, and how then they can assist in mergers and acquisitions, the eventual exit, but also scenario planning and all the different ideas that we all have as entrepreneurs. They can take those ideas and then give us information to say, this is the result of your ideas. I have a friend and a good client of ours and says, I just want to know, am I crazy or not? That's really all it. And what are the implications of my ideas? And should we or should we not do this? I think we all can trust ourselves, but we need to trust ourselves and then validate in reality and data in the rows and columns, as Pat would say. So we're going to be diving into the role of CFO as a guide in value creation in M&A. And then the next episode after this, we're going to be talking about why does the fractional executive space exist? So whether it's fractional CFOs, CMOs, all the different fractional resources you've been hearing about, and how are the different flavors structured? So that way, we want to just get up as entrepreneurs. We just want to get up and go accomplish and execute the ideas that we have. And this is a way to reduce this stress and anxiety and get the clarity of what it means to you on your personal drivers. Like we talked about a couple of themes ago, like what do you want? And then what are your financial targets and how do you grow the value? This is a way to glue it all together so you have someone that is guiding you along that way, letting you know whether you're on track or off track. All right, everybody, I'm very excited for this episode. And so without further ado, here's my interview with Mr. Pat Hobby. You ever found yourself in your office after an executive meeting and you're sitting there going, I have huge decisions to make, whether it's hiring that next key employee, buying that next piece of machinery, buying a building, launching a location or product or whatever it might be. And you're sitting there going, is this the right decision? And then you think back about the original vision you had when you started the business or the vision you have right now that you know is possible in the marketplace. And you sit there and go, how do you know and how do I know that what I'm doing is the right thing? When realistically, you have the option to just take all the money home and solve for annual cash flow and essentially just have a job that's kicking out a lot of cash. The reason that you would do all those things is because you want to grow a company that's worth a bunch of money that gives you the freedom of choices to do what you want long term. Whether that's take a back seat and be a passive investor, whether that's sell part of it or some of it, essentially just have as many choices as you want. But what we find is that most times entrepreneurs and business owners are solving for annual cash flow because they don't know how to measure and monitor the value of the business and where they are today and how what they're investing in doing is growing a more valuable business and how to measure that into the future. And I had experienced the exact same thing. I ran a family business that was doing 20 million in revenue, 100 and some employees. And my dad and I had this constant conversation back and forth about what we should be doing and where we should be going, but we never really knew whether what we were spending our time and money on was making us progress towards that eventual goal of having a valuation that we wanted that gave us the choices. So then you have to sit there and go, maybe I should just take the money home or I should just hope and pray. That is exactly why we created this financial assessment, because if you organize your financials in a certain way, and we have this financial foundation with four components, you take this assessment, it's 22 questions, you don't need your financials, and at the end result of it, there's a results page where Pat, my partner, and I walk through five videos to show you a case study of what good looks like and how to actually project out the future value of the company and how you can make the decision's clear today to say, if I do these things, what's the impact on cash flow today, my ability to fund my growth, take the distributions, pay for taxes, all while staying in line, progressing towards the valuation that I want. So go take the assessment below and I hope you enjoy. So I don't think we needed any introduction or prep for this interview because we are going to be talking about what Pat Hobby has been doing for just a couple of years. And, you know, two or three. And we're going to be unpacking a lot of different roles and functions of the finance and accounting roles that a lot of entrepreneurs have to deal with and have to manage and have to understand.
What does that mean?
You know, the
what's
reason
the
that I was excited. Yeah, right. That's why we got you here. And, you know, I think that just to tee it up is I personally, if I were to go back like a decade ago when I was running the business, our family business, or how many entrepreneurs and business owners I talk to these days, where they just lump finance and accounting into one big bucket. Like our finance people or accounting people. And then it's like, are you talking about your CPA, your bookkeeper, your CFO, your controller? And they're just like, bah. And so there's a lot of confusion, Pat, as you and I have understood around what do these roles do? What are the functions that they are providing? And why does it matter? Like, that's really what I want to unpack with you. And you've been in this space for a long time. So I want to be able to help pull out the wisdom that you have. Right, and yeah, hopefully we can help people understand like why these functions and roles matter, and then how to use them in a way that get them to the point where they're easier to, these functions and roles are helping people make easier decisions, not better. Easier decisions, but the information for the decisions, better decisions. Thank you. You know, and taking action towards the progress that they know that they need to make. So with that being said, I know you've got a kind of a thought as far as like this concept
well,
too.
Yeah. And I think you framed it up well. I think a lot of business owners don't understand their financials. And so therefore that leads them to a place where, well, I don't understand it. So I'm not going to spend much money on it. You know, I don't get it. I don't know what these people do, but they pay the bills and process the payroll and prepare my taxes, you know? So, and that's a shame because there's a lot more that can be gained from it. You know, there's a value add that can be had as opposed to looking at it just as a cost. But, you know, once a business owner kind of shifts their mindset and understands the value of useful, timely, and accurate financials and what can be done with it, then they look at the cost, and it's a cost of those functions, as additive to the value of the business as opposed to a necessary evil. So, you know, it's kind of a two-step thing. It's one, understanding why financial statements are valuable. And then secondly, mm-hmm. what are the functions that are being done and how you delineate mm-hmm. among the different levels and what does my particular company need in
mm-hmm. that regard? Well, and you and I, a handful of themes or episodes ago, talked about the three financial statements, which we can kind of, and I don't know what direction we want to start with, but like, you know, when we did that episode, we'll have the link in the show notes here of how to use your financials to clarify that path to more valuable business. That's the end right. result of where we want to get, where it's a value add, where you can make decisions of what are we investing in, where and why, yeah. and how does that impact cash flow and the future value. But you don't just get that, right? I remember like how many times you and I do these webinars and people are like, oh, I love it. Like, where in God's name do I yeah. start and who's yeah. doing this stuff?
Yes, you're operating from the assumption.
How do you want to break
understand
it down?
That there is an attribute value mm-hmm. to those things. So then it becomes understanding how to get there.
So how do we want to break down, maybe what do you want to start with, like finance versus accounting? Because I know there's going to be roles and responsibilities that we're going to break down internally for a company and, you know, what and how they can use the internal functions and roles. And then there's the, you know, the typical CPA firm that's going to have a big role as well in this. So I don't know what finance, accounting or internal.
Yeah, we start
external.
With finance and accounting. And in the days of past, in the old days, accounting departments and finance departments, and in big companies to this day, they are very distinct and different departments. In small and medium-sized businesses now, people are using accounting and finance kind of interchangeably. I mean, we have clients that call their accounting department finance department, you know, and then that's okay. But I mean, you know, accounting is the recording of transactions and the production of financial statements. I mean, that's the ultimate goal of the accounting department, including getting people paid, billing customers, you know, paying the employees, those kind of things. Finance is more analytical, taking the information that comes out of not only the financial statements, but other data within the company to analyze what's going on and to be able to draw conclusions and develop strategies from that. So like I say, in big companies, you know, they're separate functions in our world, in small and medium-sized businesses, you know, people use them interchangeably. You still need both functions, but it's just all kind of contained mm-hmm. in one department.
And I think just to kind of maybe put it in the parking lot, as you get way bigger as a business, you have such a division of labor. I mean, we're not going to be talking about a treasury in a company or like, and we'll even maybe talk about a little bit about FP&A, mm-hmm. but like, you know, as you get bigger, there's just such a huge division of labor. And we're talking about companies from the, you know, a couple million bucks to 100 million that are traditional in the middle market, lower market size, privately held
companies.
That's
right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So when we think about what is the order you want to break this down with? Because I know we've got CFOs, controllers, bookkeepers, staff accountants, and then there's the functions that they have. And so maybe we start with internal and then how those functions and how the internal business works with like a CPA firm. And maybe we'd take that towards the end.
Yeah, that's fine. And for the internal people, let's do them in reverse order from what you said. A bookkeeper... Okay. An accounting clerk, an AR clerk, a payroll clerk, you know, the team of those kinds of people, those are people who are responsible for the accurate and timely recording of transactions. In your old business, you had people that had to be invoiced every month. You know, mm-hmm. all those terms, bookkeeping or whatever kind of function clerk or personnel or team member you want to call it, perform those tasks of, you know, from billing clients to paying vendors to paying the employees to recording inventory transactions to issuing, you know, mm-hmm. purchase orders if that's part of the accounting function. Mm-hmm. The bookkeeper slash all those other terms that you want to use for that are responsible for the accurate and timely recording of transactions. That's their number one mm-hmm. priority. And a lot of clients we deal with have bookkeepers. I mean, and it is foundational. It is extremely important. And I hope nobody thinks I'm minimizing the importance of it, because without accurate and timely recording of transactions, you got nothing. So mm-hmm. it's a hugely mm-hmm. important thing. But that's a lot of times when companies have bookkeepers, they're doing a great job of recording all those transactions, but then it's kind of like, okay, that's what I've done. That's kind of the end of the story.
Yeah, it's the table at table.
Yeah, that's kind of the end of the story for what they're trained to do and what their experience allows them to do.
And as we continue to go down the roles or go up roles, Pat, I think one analogy, which is like I'm very ironic because I'm not a big sports person, but like, what? You know, I think about like a sports team, you need what? I won't digress, I promise. But the you need every role. Oh, you can't just not have them.
That's so, what like, I'm saying. This is where I think important.
You can't not have an accounts receivable or accounts payable. You can't not reconcile your bank account or not do your transactions. So I think what happens is like these words and terminologies get convoluted because there might be a service provider that does it part-time because like you don't need what you and I are not proposing is you don't need seven bodies, right? No. Like these are functions that need to be done.
Many of our clients that we work with, they have one person who does all that. They bill the customers, they pay the vendors, they record the payroll, they do the job cost, they enter the job cost on whatever it might be. One person, depending on the size of the company, can do that. Ideally, for internal controls, not to get too geeky, you want some segregation of duties. You don't want a person billing and handling the cash and posting to accounts receivable, but sometimes there's no way to get around that because your team is just so small. But yeah, it's not one person per. Those are the functions that somebody has to do in order to get all the transactions recorded in order to run the company.
And do they typically take it to the month end close or like, then are we get like, how do you want to go up? Cause then we're getting into kind of controller territory.
Yeah. So recording accurately and timely recording the transactions is a role of this first level. Again, hugely important. Some people call it bookkeeping, whatever you want to call it. The next step, and I don't know up or over, I don't like to say up cause it kind of connotes more importance. But the next level is a controller's job. To me and to you, to us, a controller's job is to produce accurate, timely, and useful financial statements at the end of every month. You got to be able to check that box in order to say, I did my job this month as a controller. Just plain and simple. They may have, now they're responsible for all the activity that leads up to that as well. In a bigger company, they're supervising the accounts payable person, the payroll person, inventory, the billing and cash receipts type people. But their job is to take all that transactional information, make other adjustments that are necessary, accrue expenses or, calculate WIP if you're a manufacturer using percent of complete or whatever it is. There's some higher level functions other than bookkeeping that need to be done. And the controller is responsible for doing that, reconciling the balance sheet every month to make sure that those numbers are right and there's supporting schedules to tie to that so that when they produce those financial statements, they're accurate. That is the role of a controller.
So, and I want to maybe unpack a couple of those comments and phrases you made or concepts because, at the end of when you say we're going to reverse engineer this, where at the end of the month, you're going to get ideally a good financial package, which then we'll kind of get into more like what we think is the best financial package with the complete oversight of all of these departments with the CFO. But when you get to that, trying to think of how to do this, like the monthly package, you get all three statements and they're accurate, right? You're not really getting analysis. Yep. It's just kind of like, hey, here's where you're at. But when you think about that controller and why there's a higher level analysis, you mentioned WIP, percentage completion and revenue recognition. And
I didn't say revenue the banking reconciliation.
I'm an accountant or finance.
That's accounting.
Let's unpack some of these concepts because that's why someone that's doing the transactions of the day-to-day kind of bookkeeping is not, you need to have this level of understanding of the business and the correlation of the operations of the business and the numbers in order to get to those correct, accurate numbers that you're talking about. So you might maybe want to describe some of these concepts.
I mean, we have numerous clients who, the bookkeeper, clerical, clerks type thing are recording transactions. Well, if they're in a manufacturing business where they're using percent of complete method, and so they've got to calculate, all the things that go with WIP, earnings in excess of billings and billings in excess of earnings, that just takes a higher level of training, a different level of training and experience in order to be able to take that transactional information, organize it in a way where they can say, okay, we've got this project, we've earned $50,000, but we've billed $75,000. So we have a liability of $25,000. And to make record the entries and transactions to accurately reflect that. So your revenue's not off and your expenses aren't off. Revenue recognition, you're recognizing revenue in the period it was earned. And then to match it up with the expenses that were incurred related to the generation of that revenue. You know, on a cash basis, you know, I bill somebody today. If I'm in professional services and I have people recording time and all that, and I pay all those people in July, but I don't invoice the people until August and they don't pay until September. Mm-hmm. Well, the expenses are in July and the revenue's in September. That doesn't work. So that's what, you know, the controller's job.
Can you explain why that doesn't work and what that does to data and decision-making?
Because you're mismatched. You're not matching the revenue and expenses. For a dollar of revenue that you've earned, you want to know what did it cost me to generate that dollar of revenue? Mm-hmm. Well, if the revenue's in September and the costs are in July, how will you ever know when mm-hmm. when it was? So it just, cash basis accounting does not work. I mean, there are some businesses where if you're a retail store and you know you record the sale at the time people pay, you know, that's okay, mm-hmm. but you've still got inventory and all these other things. So you've got to get to the point where you're recognizing revenue properly in the period it was earned, and you recognize expenses when you incur the liability or you get the service or the product, and it's not mismatched. It's called the matching principle in accounting, and you've got to have that. The controller's job is to understand that more complex situation, take the data that's generated by all the transactions, calculate that, make the proper adjustments in the financials so that when you get them, they make sense.
Well, and I think about how that impacted my old business. And I mean, oh my God, the amount of stories that you and I have as examples to prove this would take like two of these episodes. But like my own, you know, we would bill schools for their copy and their print contracts, and they would pay annually. And we have, you know, technicians and vehicles and parts and consumables that are hitting that contract, but they paid in January. And I need to there were so many issues when we had our accounting system that weren't matching those together. So we're like, why do we have 50 grand in costs of payroll and inventory and vehicles with no revenue to offset that? And so the monthly financials look like shit. Yeah. Like you're just like, okay, well, how am I doing? Yeah. And I, like, maybe explain how, like, because on an annual basis, someone might be able to say, oh, last year we were fine. But like you're not getting the monthlies and why the monthlies matter and how the revenue recognition percent at completion impact the data and the decision making.
Yeah, like for example, in your old business, you could bill somebody in January for a year's worth of printing services. So say $60,000. You record $60,000 of revenue in January, but you have no expense. And then mm-hmm. February through December, even through the next January, you've got the techs going out, you've got the supplies, you've got all these other things. So then you've
just
got
losing money.
You got no revenue, but all these expenses. So January thinks, oh my gosh, we're making all kinds of money. Let's go spend it. And then mm-hmm. for all the other months, if that was your only contract, you'd be like, we're losing money every month. Neither of those statements mm-hmm. is true. You can make the argument, well, over a year, it'll all balance out. It doesn't. I mean, you know, December 31st, if that's your year end, is an arbitrary date. I mean, it just happens to be the end of the mm-hmm. calendar. You've got to do this every month because you don't want to wait till December and find out how you're doing. You know, what good's that? I mean, you know, and we've had clients where we go in there and do work and we're like, well, we true this up in December, but during the year, we have no idea how we're doing. And mm-hmm. I'm like, well, how does that feel? And they're like, not very good.
Well, just once a year, we know how well we're doing. And like, yeah. Well, and how do you make decisions of where you're going to invest and where and how, where the cash flow and the three statements all tied together. And I think we'll get to this when we get to CPAs and then the role of the CFO managing kind of this entire process. But, you know, the CPA is, if someone's leaning on their CPA, the CPA will just do that adjustment at the end of the year. So everything's quote unquote fine. Yeah. But again, you're not seeing how well your monthlies are doing.
Well, so if you only have to make decisions at the end of the year, okay. Well,
wouldn't that be nice? That's one hell of a business to run, right? I mean,
you know, that it just doesn't work. But, you know, I mean, adjusting inventory or adjusting, you know, your percent of complete to record your revenue and that kind of thing. I mean, we've really had clients that say we do it once a year. And it all joking aside, throughout the year, they have no idea if they're making or losing money. And that's the anxiety creating situations that people get themselves into, that and their lack of ability to make good decisions along the way.
And the controller's job is to help sync all this up. And again, we're kind of alluding to this cash basis, but it's cash versus accrual, right? So they're understanding how the business is operating, and then aligning everything for a clean monthly financial.
At the end of the month, the balance sheet has to be reconciled. When I look at cash, my cash is reconciled, my AR is reconciled, my inventory, my WIP, my payables, my accrued payroll, all these things are reconciled. If your beginning balance sheet's correct, and beginning could be the end of last month, and the balance sheet at the end of this month is right, and you know for certain, because all those accounts are reconciled, the net income on your income statement is right. You may have something on the wrong line. You may have something in supplies and it should be office expense or something, but your net income is right. And I think we talked, you remember better than I, how the statements are tied together. That's part of it. When your balance sheets are right, your income statement is right, and therefore your cash flow statement's right. So that's the controller's job, is when they hit the button and have their system produce the income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flows. Not many companies do that, and they should, that they know they're right.
How many controllers, like with a typical controller, I think about how many CFOs we interview that don't use all three statements in a monthly package or an annual package. How much, you know, the controller's job, like just income statement, the balance sheet, like you're talking about.
Most
like,
of the time.
Would you consider like a more advanced controller someone that's producing all three and tying them together? Or
yeah.
How would you?
Yeah, it somebody who's more advanced. The statement of cash flows is just very critical. Very critical. And it shows where your money's coming from and where it's going. I mean, we get people all the time that says, we're doing great and I never have any cash. Why? And it's because they don't have a statement of cash flows. And when we prepare one for them, they're like, now I get it, you know, and then at least I've got to offer better terms. I've got to put somebody on collecting receivables, so my receivables just don't keep growing. I've got to look at the days of inventory that I have, so that just doesn't get out of hand. That some inventory person, I mean, if I was responsible for inventory supplying to a shop, of course I'd want a lot of inventory. So I never ran out. But if you're not watching that, you can't make those decisions to figure out why we're making money, but we never have any cash. And that happens a lot.
Who would be the primary person responsible for that specific thing?
Now we're moving into CFO type work. And we got to be careful. There's not this clear break between the roles. You know, they're people. You know, they have varying levels of education and experience and training. So there's some people with the title of controller that do really advanced work and some that don't do really advanced work. So we got to be a little bit careful, but taking the information, getting it in a format and using it to do analysis to aid in decision-making, that's part of the CFO's role, is to say, what metrics are important to us? What's the cash conversion cycle? What's the liquidity ratio? What's the, you know, all these things that you can sit with the business owner that says, our inventory is getting out of control. Here's the data to support that. We used to carry 45 days worth of inventory. Now we've got 90 and it's eaten up $200,000 of cash. You know, is that a good thing? Is it a supply chain issue? We've got to get ahead so that we don't run out, or are we being lazy and not managing our inventory well and doing that? But that's moving now into the CFO's role because they're helping to make those decisions.
Well, and I think, you know, you touched on something that was really important, I thought, is that these are people and they have different varying skill sets, which is why this topic that we're talking about, the functions, is so damn important. Because, you know, when someone goes finance people, well, you could have, and as we get into the CFO role, we can talk about the CFOs that are on our team versus the people that we don't think are a good fit. And it helps people understand how to take a person and match that person's skill set and their pay to what gaps do we have and how do we round out those gaps? And I think another thing that's important that you and I have run into, Pat, is that, you know, the CFO knows how the mousetrap is built. That's another way that I've put it, or another analogy I've given is like, someone goes like, well, when should I hire a CFO? You know, should I wait till year 5 or 10? And I'm like, you wouldn't wait till halfway through a construction project to have the blueprint built, would you?
No.
And the blueprint that I'm referring to is, this is an asset that kicks out cash that's worth something, and we're going to understand how to grow that asset. And that's where a CFO is looking at it from, I know how the mousetrap's built, and mm-hmm. I understand the blueprint. Where like, I see like the controller is more of like the function that they're taking orders from the general contractor architect of saying, okay, here's where we're going and why. Because otherwise, yeah. like you and I have run into issues where someone's like, oh, I've got a CFO and they're more of a controller. And it's like, right. well, if they're more of a control, if they were actually a CFO, you wouldn't have to tell them what to do, right?
Yeah. And it's, again, it's a little bit hard to talk about these without making one sound more important than the other. And it's, they're all so critical to do.
Go back to a sports team analogy. I mean, I offered it up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, without a center, you know, it's hard to run an offense. You know, you can have the best wide receiver in the world, but it's, if the business owner is looking at the accounting function as a necessary evil and a cost, they're going to spend the least amount of money on it just to get people paid and get the vendors paid and bill the customers. Mm-hmm. And that's it. They don't, you know, they may at the end of the month, they judge how their business is doing by how much money's in the bank. I mean, every morning they open up the app for the bank and look at the cash balance and make decisions based on that. Mm-hmm. Literally make decisions based on that. And that's just not good enough. And these other roles are essential in order to get to the place where you have accurate, useful, and timely financials that tell the story of the business. You get insights from the historical information in order to marry up with the strategies you want to implement to look into the future.
Mm-hmm.
It is a continuum. That, and maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead here, but
keep going. No, seriously.
But it's not just for the sake of having them. It is incredibly valuable information. How are we doing? Did the strategies we put in place last year, are they working?
And we define working, Mr. CFO, because I know
making
what you
define. Are we making a good return, a good ROI on this, a good return on investment? I mean,
Not just more top line revenue. That's not all we're focusing on here.
No,
we have
no.
a lot of people though, Pat.
Yeah, congratulations. You're not making any money. And then when you get accurate historicals, then you can use those to project out to the future. And that's that higher level financial strategic planning thought process that a CFO mm-hmm. really mm-hmm. should be bringing to the table.
So I love it. And you set the foundation, because I want to explain what, you know, when I was doing the CFO recruiting last year, what the people that we were not going towards and gravitating towards in the middle market. And then what maybe we could do is talk about, like, specifically from your perspective, and we can tell some stories, but how you've been a CFO and the role that you have with CEOs and like kind of the monthly and the quarterly and strategic planning of what you bring to the table. So like, just to tee it up there, like, you know, when I was going through CFOs and you and I were trying to figure out the criteria and like what's going on, like, I remember like there'd be people like, oh my God, look at that resume, the $1 billion banker, or like, you know, they ran a healthcare, you know, chain of 17 hospitals, or they're like, you know, in all these different industries are important. But then I remember we brought in one guy that we were interviewing and he's like, so where's my team of 20? It's like, nope. There is no team of 20. So there's this kind of like, as the size go up, the CFO title means different things.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to get at is kind of like, maybe you can expand on the kind of the working CFO that we're talking about. And then we can get into kind of what that experience and the kind of the advice or discussions you're having. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, so taking the financial statements, using the information to track certain metrics and track them over time to say, are we on trend to make budget? Are we at the right run rate? Or are these investments we made paying off, or are they not paying off? That continual analysis of where we've been, where do we want to go, and are we on track is essential to doing that.
And track to what? Where, like, maybe expand on that. Where have we been? Where are we going? And we're on track. What are you using to judge that?
You should be using what the owner has defined as their goal. The owners want three things: create wealth, enjoy their work, make an impact. Creating wealth, I hope that the people listening to this and the business owners we deal with are thinking about their company, their ownership in a company, not their job, their ownership in a company as a financial asset. You want it to grow.
In value, period.
If you own that asset, you want it to grow. If you own Apple stock, you want it to grow. And so being on track to achieve, and through all the work that they need to do, that we help them do, to be on track to achieve that goal in 8 years, I want to be at X. Maybe I want to sell, maybe I don't, maybe I want to become an ESOP, maybe whatever it is, but knowing where you are today, my company is worth about X. I want it to be worth 3X. Mm-hmm. In 8 years, measuring that so that you can tell all along the way, are we on track to hit mm-hmm. those goals that the owner has set for themselves?
So, and that's a perfect tee up, because, like, I think about, like, all the conversations I have with people, and it's like, you know, because I spend a lot of my time explaining what the role of a CFO is, because most people between a couple million and 50 million have never actually had a CFO. Mm-hmm. You know, you and I have talked, and these are ranges for everybody. So this is not like Robert Half's, like, payroll, you know, the once right. a year where it comes out and blows everybody's company up for a while. It's like, you know, you get your controller between what, 85 and 130-ish or something like that, depending on size of company and complexities. And then your CFO between what, 150, 175, and 300, depending on yeah. complexities and stuff. So, like, you and I have constantly said, like, if, you know, someone's a CFO and they're getting 100 grand, most likely they're not a right. CFO, right? Unless you found right. someone that is retired yeah. and you got a good deal or something like that.
Yeah.
And I say all that because, you know, as we get into what is the oversight of the CFO with that pay and that experience look like? And what as I'm about to tee up, and we can kind of talk the oversight, but I always say to someone, like, the CFO is sitting there and taking the idea, the visionary, and saying, like, when you and I met, I go on all these things. Great. How do we fund those? How does that impact the current cash flow and the future value of the company, my distributions and my taxes?
And are we getting a good return on that? Could we spend the money between, if you have three choices of things to do, which one provides the best return?
Yeah. I remember when our dear friend Jimmy Fritz called me up. He said, I just love working with Pac. He's like, I just want to know, is this a good idea or not? should I be worried or not? And it's really just taking that idea and putting a sanity check to it and then throwing it into that framework of thoughts. Yeah. And so the CFO, in order to have that macro oversight, there's a lot of areas of expertise that they have that impact the risk and that cash flow. So I don't know if you want to maybe talk through, like, what is, like, the CFO's oversight and
So budgeting is one of them. You know, a lot of companies hate to do budgeting. They don't get it. They don't understand the process. But budgeting for the next year, the next 12 months, you know, come the fall with all our clients, we'll start the budgeting process to budget for 2023. Detail bottom from the ground floor up on the important things, but understanding that and involving the leadership team so they're accountable to that. Sales department's accountable for sales, production department's accounting for COGS and, you know, all of that kind of thing. That's important.
Well, I think that's an important, because this budgeting thing is something that you and I have realized that, you know, we've talked in some of the previous episodes that it's not divide by 12, add 5%. Can you expand on your budgeting process that you and all our CFOs and a good CFO would do? Because it's a business planning exercise, period. It's not some, going back to what you said at the beginning, Pat, it's not some, you know, cost administrative BS thing that someone hates. It should be the most insightful thing that they do each year if they're doing it the right way. So how would a CFO lead that process with other departments and the operations?
Yeah. And I'm going to repeat something you said. Don't take last year's add 5%, divide by 12 to every line. Don't waste your time doing that. I mean, that's not budgeting. Salespeople love to claim that everything starts with sales. I mean, you know, they always brag at you, people like you. Everything, if it weren't for sales, nothing would happen. Until we get to budgeting, we say, okay, we can't do anything until you tell us what sales are. Well, that's really hard. then they don't want to.
Wait, I got to be accurate first. Here? Like, you're going to tell me
that I want to be first then. You know, customer analysis. What's our churn? which customers are growing? Are there certain segments, depending on what you have, where, you know, certain kinds of customers are growing? Trying is on, and you don't have to go down to your 128th customer on your size list to figure out if their 3,000 is going to go to 3,500. You know, a lot of times the 80-20 rule will come into play. Your top 20 customers or 20% of them are going to account for 80% of your revenue. Making sure you get a really good sales projection. Sometimes that takes going to the salespeople, going to their clients. And I've encouraged people to do this, and it works a lot of times. We're in the budgeting process. What do you think you're going to do with us next year?
You just made every salesperson that's listening in pucker up a little bit.
throw up a little bit in their mouth. I'm telling you, I've seen that help salespeople deliver, I mean, build relationships with their customers. Because you're saying yes about me, but what do you guys think you're going to do next year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've seen it work so many times. Salespeople resist it until they've done it, and then they can't help themselves. But in today's world, though, you have quarterly business reviews. You know, the sales function has really gotten in tune with that, and a lot of that information is there. Starting with a really good sales forecast by month. Your old industry, 40% of your revenue for a certain segment of it came in the last quarter of the year.
Mm-hmm.
What good does it take to take an annual number and divide it by 12?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you staff for that? How do you account for that? Based on the sales number, then you got to look at what does it cost to produce the revenue, either in products or services? Are your margins declining? Do we have increased input cost? Are we going to have to raise pricing? We've had clients that were in the steel fabrication business. It's got huge cost increases, a little bit slow to raise prices, and it hurt them. But you got to take that into account. You know, how are we going to handle, you know, if the salespeople say we can't afford to raise prices, but our costs are going up, our margins are going to decrease.
And as you're getting into this, Pat, too, this is where I've said, like, this budgeting experience that you're referring to that is led by the CFO, like, if there's no CFO and it's just the owner and a controller, the owner's ultimately responsible for knowing all of these things and their business implications on the operations and the cash flow, inflation, you know, labor issues. You know, how about the constant comment that we hear is, I would love to hire a president so I can get out of this. Well, I don't know. Can you do that in April or, you know, August or, you know, September? It's taking the ideas and the wishes and wants and handing it to someone like you and saying, this is what all needs to come together. And can we afford to do these things and when?
Yeah.
Right.
And the CFO is the one to know where to go get the information,
you know, and whether it's right or wrong, or people are BSing or not. Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, to continue that, then look at your significant costs in the business. Usually labor, compensation is a big cost. How many people do we have? Where are we adding people? When are we adding them? You know, and budgeting it out by month to say, here's what our payroll looks like. And then any other significant costs. Don't go worrying about office supplies. Mm-hmm. That's one where you can add 5% to and be done with it. But in most companies, maybe 10 line items in the financial, on the income statement, are worth a real hard look at it. And the rest of it is probably more of a minimal, you know, effort. But that is just really important, because then if you get your team involved, you can hold them accountable. And if you show them how they're doing to budget every month, that's a big incentive. And of course, you got to, in your and I's world, we try and encourage people to tie compensation to those things.
I love it. You just took the thought out of my head.
Yeah. But being able to hold people accountable in a positive way, you know, of doing that.
Well, and I think
the budgeting is really important.
I was just going to say, because like when you're talking about budget, like, and again, I'm what I'm trying to continue to pull out is that the CFO is the fabric that glues all this stuff together. And the owner's been usually the one who holds all this stuff in their head. And like you said, they know it and they look at their checking account instead of doing this in a way that plans it all out. And what you were saying of the conflict of sales and service, were like, what are we selling at what margins? And then how much inventory or how many people, whatever it was, product, service, manufacturing, you're tying those two together at the right margins. And the CFO is the glue, right? Mm-hmm. Between sales, service, and understanding how this all flows together.
Yep.
So then we
project that out 2 or 3 years. You don't go through the same detailed level. Then you say, we think sales are going to grow by 10% a year, 15%, or our margin's going to get squeezed. What's our SG&A going to do? At the end, you have next year's budget, very detailed. and then out year projections. If you could do the next 4 years, so you got 5 years worth of information, you can do it in a three statement model, income mm-hmm. statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flows, assuming those projections are correct. And of course, we all know they change. You can look and say, here's what my financials are going to look like in 5 years. Mm-hmm. That is incredibly insightful information because it'll help lead you to, I'm getting closer to my goal or I'm not.
And you, when you said
from that, you can actually project a range of value of a company.
Yes.
And then you get to really valuable information.
And when you wrap around that value, like you had said, you know, this is where I think about how the mousetrap is built or the blueprint, right? Which is, if I want to net on whatever transaction, just like, again, we go, everybody can go back and refer to the financial, how to view your company as a financial asset that Pat and I did, talking about the three statements. Cause you said, then you have good financials and you're not talking about just the income statement. You're talking about all three mm-hmm. with those projections tied out with a future value of the company. And then there's a couple major components inside there, Pat, that I don't know. I've never really seen any controllers that do. Like you said, you might, as it depends on the person, but what is working capital? How are we going to fund that growth? You know, mm-hmm. and then how does that impact my distributions as the owner and my ability to pay taxes? So like, I don't know, like in my head, you know, I'm the pitcher guy, I knew the roles and columns. It's like, mm-hmm. I can see that picture and you need to understand what that picture is. So that way when you're managing the budgeting, sales, operations, you know, internal admin, like how those puzzle pieces fit into that framework. So like, I don't know, maybe you can talk about working capital and like as the role of the CFO and distributions and taxes, how that plays into this.
Yeah. One other quick thing, strategic planning is another part of it, because say, what is it? We have some objectives and some goals to grow the value of the company. If we collectively determine that takes revenue growth, what are the strategies to do that? Open another office, offer more services, whatever, raise prices, whatever it might do. And let's say we hit on some strategies that just knock it out of the park mm-hmm. and we're growing it. I'm making up a number, 30% a year, mm-hmm. which is just awesome. But you're having to carry more receivables, carry more inventory, and you're in a business where you can't stretch your vendors for some reason, you know, a long way. You get to working capital, those assets less the liabilities that you need to operate your business. This is where companies can grow so fast that they run out of money. Mm-hmm. And having negative cash flow from operations is okay in a growth mode, as long as you know it ahead of time and have a way to fund it. Mm-hmm. Lines of credit are fine to fund increases in inventory and accounts receivable. They're not okay to fund losses.
Yeah, because in the first one, you know that if July, August, September, October, we're gonna be negative cash flow from operations, but then the following months it paid off.
Yeah. Like, exactly.
Fine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So just pulling all that information together, getting the three statements, being able to project it out. You know, when you budget, I think I skipped over this. When you budget by month, you should have the three statements mm-hmm. in your budget: income statement, balance sheet, and statement of cash flows. It's not that difficult once you get it set up. But just understanding all that so you can say, you know what, I don't have a source of capital, debt or equity, to fund that kind of growth. So I'm only going to grow at 20% a year. Sounds crazy, but that's better than running out of money and closing up.
And how many people
do you... I've seen where people grow themselves out of mm-hmm. existence.
Well, and then how many people that's just, you're compartmentalizing right now the business as itself. Mm-hmm. How many people do we know that they have, so you might grow yourself out of business, but what if you had a certain level of distributions anticipated? Like, that's another factor that is a use of cash. That, I mean, how many times, like, I can't even count how many times where we talk to, you know, potential prospects or even just random conversations or clients where, oh, I bought X, Y, and Z building, machinery, whatever, took a big distribution last year. Holy shit, I'm out of cash now.
And it's tax time.
And I wanted another distribution. Yeah, how about that?
They have to have another distribution. I mean, and if you, so just doing all this work takes the uncertainty out of all of mm-hmm. I know come, you know, X dates, the estimated tax payments during the year, I've got to do that, and we can calculate it along the way, set the money aside so that, you know, there are no surprises. You minimize the surprises. Yeah. There are always surprises. if you run a business.
By the way, everybody, Pat knew COVID was coming. No, I'm just kidding.
some, something's going to happen. But the more prepared you are, the better off you're going to be, obviously. And so a lot of people, it seems like mumbo jumbo. When you get to understanding the financials, and I'm just going to go off script here a little bit. We are working on a course of financial literacy. When you understand them, not trying to make anybody else an accountant. I turn Ryan into an accountant. That's
I stay away from spreadsheets. I know what it means.
Yeah, I'm done. But being able to read them and understand them and use the information to make decisions, that's what business owners want to do. Mm-hmm. They're like, just tell me the information. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're not there to tell people what to do. Mm-hmm. The people we deal with, most business owners, they're plenty smart to figure out what to do. They just need the right information.
Well, and this is where the again, going back to the CFO is the fabric and the blueprint architect. I don't even know if I'm messing up those words. You have a blueprint based on an architect that says, I know exactly what the whole picture needs to look like. And here's how all the variables fit into place. Because if one of those components is off, it doesn't work. And which is why the CFO who's responsible then for the banking relationship, the CPA relationship, mm-hmm. and not just the finance function. So let's start with internally too. Because like, again, well, let me go back a sec. It's about taking the visionary entrepreneur's idea and then understanding how that translates into a cash flow and financial asset, which is where the CFO is that oversight of that. But there's other things other than the finance function internally that are necessary to oversee that fit into that puzzle picture or that puzzle. And then also the banking, the CPA relationship. Let's talk about the internal functions that a lot of CFOs typically oversee as well.
The internal ones?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some of them are like HR from a compliance point of view. Most CFOs probably shouldn't be in charge of culture at a company.
If you're listening in, Pat's face was kind of funny, wasn't he?
Speaking from experience, yeah, I won't even go through my three HR theorems because it would probably be insulting. But from a compliance point of view, insurance, you know, analyze, do we have the best insurance plan? 401k, you know, is our 401k plan set up? A real quick, disability insurance. If the company pays the premium for disability insurance and somebody goes out on disability, their payments from the insurance company are taxable. The employee has to pay tax on the insurance proceeds they get. If the employee pays the premium and you can actually raise their pay so they aren't out the money, they pay the premiums, they go on disability, and when they get money from the insurance company, it's not taxable. Little things like that. Mm-hmm. Years and years ago, we made the switch. When I learned this and I switched it at our company, a guy had a stroke after that. And I can still remember to this day, his wife calling saying, if we had to pay tax on this money, we'd have to sell our house.
Wow.
I mean, that little change, mm-hmm. just understanding those things, you know, property and casualty insurance. Do you have employer practices insurance? Are you adequately covered? You know, do you have an umbrella? Do you, you know, risk management, all those risk management type things. The CFO is just in the best position to shepherd over those activities. IT from a contract point of view and those kind of things, all those kind of services, you know, most CFOs, I mean, they're not going to go configure a server, obviously, but just managing that contract and that relationship a lot of times falls to the CFO and relieves the business owner from mm-hmm. having to do that. If most business owners are visionary types where they've got a lot of ideas, and to the degree they're trying to think about these other things, they're not focused on what they're best at and what they can add more value to.
And I'll add also, like with the IT in the software side, how many times, you know, a lot of our CFOs are like, my old CFO will get involved in, if you're rolling out an ERP system or time tracking or billing system, all of that stuff in the operations eventually fall into the financials. So it's about saying, hey, if you do these things and this is how people record their time, or this is how you take things out of inventory, like, you're not the one developing the ERP system or rolling that out like a project manager would, but you're intimately involved in that. And then also, maybe you can speak to, maybe comment on that if you want, but also like in sales comp plans, executive phantom stock plans, and just all these things that touch the financials and then, you know, essentially relate to the risk of the cash flow and the asset.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the accounting and finance department, however you think about it, it touches every part of the company. So a lot of these things are best reside in that department, because something you do, you change a new ERP system or something, it touches every department. And, you know, you put the sales department in charge of it, they're going to focus on how it best suits them. Or you put the production department in charge of it, they're going to, you know, focus on what best suits them. But all those things, and developing compensation plans, which should be driving behavior. I have a client now, it happens to be one of my clients, and we our outsourced HR department did a compensation study. And they're like, okay, the management of this should reside in the accounting and finance department, you know, on an ongoing basis, you know, because they're the ones who know when people get raises and all these other things. So, you know, having influence over all those, they aren't responsible all the time for every part of it, but being intimately involved with it, it is just critical. All those kind of back office type things. A lot of business owners
get sucked into pricing.
I mean, we had a client who was not making money, and our CFO got in there and one of our analysts, and they figured, they're like, your margins have evaporated. Your costs have gone up and your pricing hasn't kept up. And when they did that and the client raised their prices, all of a sudden, I think, was it 1 month this year was the most profitable month in the company's history. I mean, it literally turned it around. But understanding that and working with the sales department to say, you know, here's the contribution margin of the work we're doing, you know, and you're taking jobs that are just crowding out more profitable jobs. Just understanding all that is critical.
You know what I think? This just came to me, Pat, as we're talking about this, is that, you know, like if someone's running EOS and they've got all these projects, quarterly projects, monthly projects, or whatever the heck operating system rocks. And I was just like, we're not a total EOS shop here. I don't really care what people do, but they've got weekly meetings, monthly meetings, quarterly meetings. But there are these projects that department heads are doing. The CFO is the one that's working side by side with the sales lead on the pricing and the compensation. They're working with the operations manager on the pricing and the inventory and all that stuff about the financial implications. And one thing that I've always said to someone, like when we're talking in my prospecting calls with them, is like when they're trying to understand this, I'm like, and what we're going to be talking about types of services next episode and how the flavors of this work. But like if the CFO is not there, the owner's the one doing that, the owner / CEO. So when they say like, I'm so damn stressed and I'm holding all of this on my shoulders, they're doing all of the things you're talking about with no financial education. And they're just
training
or anything. It's like, I know that pricing matters, or I know we need this comp plan. I know we need this executive plan. I know we have HR issues. I know, like, they know all these things. But like, when I say it, like, the purpose of a CFO is you actually buy your mental real estate and sanity back.
Yeah. And that's it's an investment. I mean, because the CFO is a financial strategic partner to the business owner. Is it a cost? Sure. You know, I assume they want to be paid. But it's an investment that will pay off in the long run. You got better information, better analysis, you make better decisions. And in the end, the whole objective is to grow the value of your asset, which is your ownership in your company. And flying blind is not going to get you there.
And that's people making gut decisions.
You can win the lottery. Or that's one way to create wealth, or you can pay attention to what you're doing
and have confidence
be intentional about growing the value of your business
and being confident that you're spending your time, money, and capital in the right time, money, and energy and capital in the right places. And so I know, let's say we got another 10 to 20 minutes or something like that. So as we move into then like a little bit more on the outside of the business, so we covered a lot of the internal functions. And then now we've got, you know, our CPA, a banker. So how does the interface of the CFO work with the CPA and the banker? And I don't know where we want to throw or we can weave in mergers and acquisitions or like acquiring companies too inside of all that.
Yeah, because okay. So let's talk about the banker first. When you're a growing company, you have working capital needs, and you can be growing and you may need a line of credit. You may need to buy equipment that you want to fund over 5 or 7 years. You want to do these things. There's a proper role for debt. Some people are just debt averse, you know, but there's a proper role in my opinion, for a right level of debt. You can get, you can increase your return on your investment by mixing in some debt with just pure cash investment.
Can I comment on that real quick? If you were to give me the lens that we've been talking about, because I literally had this conversation with someone going through our training this week where I hate that, literally exactly like you said, and they've got no cash right now. So it's like, yeah, it's like a $15 or $16 million business. And it's like, well, if someone had the long view of the three statements out years, they'd be able to say, well, oh, if I had $500,000 in debt, I have like 100% chance of servicing that debt. So I guess who cares, right?
Oh yeah, and we had a client like that, just no debt. But then when we showed them, here's how you service it, they're like, okay, we're good with that. When you go to a bank armed with the information, say, here's our historicals, they're timely, useful, and accurate. The three statements, here's our budget for the next year by month. Three statements, here's our out year projections. Here's where we're showing we're making this investment. We want to buy $1 million worth of equipment. We want to fund 80% of it. Here's how we're going to pay it off. Here's the statement of cash flows. They can be like, okay, yeah, all right.
I mean, please, can I have a bigger line of credit?
Yeah, I mean, and so it just enables you to work with one of your advisors, where they have confidence in what you're doing and your information, and hopefully you've told them, here's where I want to get to as well, and they can be the financial partner that helps you get there from a lending point of view, and so. It's not just for the sake of doing it. It has impact on outside advisors of saying, here's how we want to do it. And, you know, you go in without anything and you're like, hey, I'd like to borrow $1 million to buy some equipment. You're like, well, how are you going to pay for it? What kind of returns are going to be? How are you going to service it? We'll sell enough to pay it off.
Real hard work, man. Trust me.
Well, and you know, credit's been really easy over numerous years. It's getting tighter. We're here in the last working day of July where credit's getting tighter. Interest rates are going up, and you know, you see headlines where banks are anticipating more losses. That's going to just naturally make credit tighter. So, but they're going to want to still loan money because that's how the banks make money. So they're going to gravitate towards those people who they have the most confidence in.
Exclamation point, highlight what you just said. Cause like, I think about the dynamic that I've watched change with our clients, or like, I mean, the miserable experience that I had a decade ago, a decade later, I think about, you know, commercial bankers, and my heart goes out to that profession when they're just trying to just understand, does this person have a plan? Do we believe that they're going to be able to give us our money back? And what degree of confidence do we have in that? And it's way easier to have good conversations with, if you just went to someone like what you just said, now you're having a discussion of equals, and it's more of a, like, does this puzzle piece of this, you know, sort of debt or equity fit into this, you know, puzzle or not? And it's not like, I don't like you, or I like you, or you're just telling me no, and I'm an entrepreneur, and I'm going to, you know, you don't believe my vision. It's just a ridiculous mismatch.
When the banker has someone say, hey, let's think about financing this a different way, or do you want a swap agreement, or do you want to, you know, just... They can then, instead of just trying to figure out, do they believe you, be creative and help you get to where you want to go in a more efficient way. So it's really important in that kind of world. When you talk about the outside CPA, their roles generally are some kind of what they call assurance. Are you having a review or an audit at the end of the year? You know, and then tax prep. You know, but
before we go into the tax prep, like review, audit, maybe just explain what they are, maybe a little bit of difference in why are they necessary, and maybe as it relates to the bank or something.
Yep. So an audit is the most extensive. That's where they come in and they do the work necessary, has been dictated by the AICPA, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. You have to be licensed to do it. And they express an opinion on your financials. They're saying, based on all the work we've done and all the representations by management, we feel that these financial statements fairly reflect the financial condition of the company. They have footnotes, they do a lot of testing, and they do a lot of work. You have a lot of debt outstanding, the bank's going to want you to have an audit. But they will will tick and tie all the balance sheet accounts. They'll do all kinds of testing to make sure that they can express that opinion, that the financial statements fairly represent the financial condition of the company. There's a process one step below that called a review. They take your financial statements. They're obligated to do analytics. So they look at changes in the financial statements, and then they inquire of management, why are receivables way up, or why are, you know, in order to gain some confidence. And their opinion says, well, we didn't find anything wrong. You know, they're mm-hmm. they're accurate to the degree that we didn't find anything that we think should lead us to believe otherwise. A lot of times the CPAs will do some, for companies who aren't doing the work throughout the year or don't have the staff to do the work, they will help them make some of the entries, you know, that get the financial statements accurate at the end of the year. Again, that's not best practice, because you need to have accurate financials mm-hmm. month by month by month. So that's on the assurance side. You know, there's a compilation, and forgive me to all the CPAs out there, but they take your financials and slap them on their letterhead and say, this is a compilation. We don't know anything about them. You know, here they are. I mean, they're not obligated to do any work.
Yeah.
You know, they do minimal work, but very minimal. So that's what a CPA firm will do from an audit or review. Mm-hmm. Reviews are the most common. That's probably the most common, except for bigger companies. You know, you become an ESOP, or you have a significant amount of debt, or some reason you're going to have an audit.
And then you and I have talked in the past where, like, if you have any anticipation of a transaction of you selling in 2 to 3 years, doing those audits, getting a couple of those under your belt is just going to, again, bring trust and confidence that you're telling the truth.
Absolutely. If you're trying to sell your company, you're like, well, I've never had an audit, review, or compilation or anything, but here are my financials, and your balance sheet doesn't balance, you know, when you give to them, versus the exact same thing where I've had an audit for 3 years. Mm-hmm. You're in a better position to negotiate. I mean, a better price, literally a better price, because mm-hmm. in the first situation, the buyer's going to say, I don't have a lot of comps in there, so I'm going to hedge my bet mm-hmm. on my price mm-hmm. because I don't know if these are right or not.
So can you talk about the CFO's direct line of communication? Like, if there's a CEO, owner, CFO, and then the CPA, what is the role of the CFO in interfacing with this entire process?
The CFO should have the primary relationship with the CPA firm. The owner can attend one meeting a year, usually, where they review the financials and that kind of thing. But the CFO has got to be the contact for getting all that work done.
And you're the one that's providing.
More organized you are, and the cleaner your financials are, the cheaper your review or audit's going to be, because, you know, if they have to recreate a bunch of work, it's just going to be expensive.
So then the CFO is essentially bringing the financials in the clean way that you've been talking about, telling the story, helping the CPA.
All the account reconciliations, all the supporting documents. Yep.
So then as we think, and we're not going to get into a ton of other CPA roles, because a lot of other bigger CPA firms that are growing nowadays might have a professional services. They might be doing some of that bookkeeping or helping someone with the tax analysis of a sale. But again, the CFO should be guiding, even on the sale, specifically on the sale, kind of guiding that CPA. But like other CPA firms are kind of building out some of the functions, services to provide the functions that we're talking about.
They are. They're trying.
So the next thing is the mergers and acquisitions. So, you know, a lot of oh my kind of conversations I had, like, hey, we're going to like buy this company. And it's like, what's your plan? Like, how are the combined companies going to look? And so maybe just talk about the role of a CFO in an acquisition strategy, or even on an eventual sale, maybe kind of take that in one, two step.
So On the analysis, you know, the CFO was going to be involved with the owner in developing an acquisition strategy. We have several clients now that are in kind of an acquisition mode because that's part of their growth strategy. We have one client that says in 2026, we want to be at this level of revenue and this level of EBITDA. And when we look at our core business, we've projected it out for all those years, we're short. And it's in an industry where it's tough to fill that gap between where they're projected to be and where they want to be, except through acquisition. So we're on an active acquisition strategy. Analyze, you know, doing the initial diligence and modeling to say, if we paid X for this, here's how the three statements, again, and in our analysis, we have a tab called three statements, you know, of in the out year projections, how's this thing going to pay for itself? Mm-hmm. If you pay this amount of money for it, what kind is it going to cash flow, first of all? And secondly, what's the return on the investment of the dollars you have to put in? Most times you mix some of your own cash with some debt. Mm-hmm. And then you say, what's our internal rate of return? What's our rate of return on this investment? And say, if it's 5%, say, we're not buying a company and going through all that risk in order to get a 5% return. We can go out and get a very safe investment mm-hmm. and get that kind of return, you know, but is it, and we set a minimum, we say we need to get at least a 20, 22, 23% return before we even consider it.
So then,
so it's the CFO's role to help with the strategy and to take the financials. You sign an NDA with a target, you get their financials, you put them in a model, you talk internally about the team and talk about the strategy of, and talk with other experts about what's a range, you know, depending on the industry, and say, here's what we think this business is worth. And if we paid this, here's how the financial statements would look, and here's our return. I'm not kidding. Today, I was on a call with a client, and one of the business owners who is not a financial person said, if you change a multiple to 6, what's our IRR? He has learned that much. I mean, we were at a 5. He's like, if we pay a 6, what's our return on that? And on the fly, we're changing it and seeing it. He's like, okay, but getting to that level of understanding it, then it's not this big mystery. Mm-hmm. If I bought this company for $1 million, what's going to happen? Can I pay for it?
Cross your fingers. Synergies, Pat. Synergies. It's the fabric and the glue behind everything. And then, you said what do we
not, not everything. Let's be specific. Yeah. About yep, that.
Yep. But hold that thought for a sec, put your thumb up.
Okay.
That's
how I remember.
So you said, what are we going to pay for? But it's also part of the CFO as that modeling is how is it debt, equity, earnouts, promissory notes. And then how does that impact the mothership and the long-term goal? And then, absolutely. Explain maybe how then you get the CPA and the bank and the attorneys involved in that. And then go back to then it's not the everything. Because I think that'll be a good wrap up.
Yeah. And so for the bank, for example, one of our clients made an acquisition and we had this modeling and we put it to them and they started asking just what I thought was an unusual amount of questions about it. It wasn't that big of a deal dollar wise. And I finally said to the banker, this is kind of like we're asking to buy money kind of like a home loan here. We're in that neighborhood. Let's don't kill ourselves over this. He's like, yeah, you're right. Your modeling works, but taking that and going to a bank and saying, here's what we think will happen on this. Mm-hmm. And if they have that, then they can kind of test it and say, if growth's not that much or how much cushion do you have in order to pay us back? And it, again, it's just like dealing with your banker on other issues. The more information you have, the more precise it is, the more understandable it is, the easier they're going to have getting a comfort level with that.
And then you're then helping interface with the financing. And then you've got the legal and then the CPA that you're also interfacing. And there's a point of why I'm kind of helping you explain this experience and it'll tie out with our wrap up. So you explain because you're also even if there's not an acquisition, the CFO is interfacing with the general counsel for the most part.
Oh, yeah. On acquisition, you're kind of coordinating the whole effort. You're quarterbacking the whole effort, the due diligence, the legal docs, asset versus tax or stock sale, just all that, working with the people to do that. Most business owners have never done that. And, they want to understand it in give me the facts, give me the basics of it. Because they need to understand it, obviously, but just it all ties into you know, the process of, is this going to be a good investment for the company? There's so many things that have to happen. You know, I've read more purchase agreements than I can shake a stick at. My business owners aren't going to read every one of those documents.
Oh, come on, like, I would.
Let's talk through the important sections of this so that they understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's super critical to have somebody who can quarterback those things.
And, you know, this is getting into the, well, by the way, just one comment is, it's just reverse if you're the company selling, right? You're quarterbacking all those same people and you're having conversations with the investment banker, the attorney, the CPA, as well on the exit of the company that, or the owner that we're talking about.
Yeah. And on a sale, you want to work with the tax preparer, mm-hmm. who is their CPA. We help the owner with some very high level calculations of gross net proceeds. If you sell it for this, we got cost of this, you pay taxes, here's your basis, here's your tax rate. When you get to selling, then you engage with their CPA, says, we're thinking about selling this company under these terms. Here's the proposed, here's the asset purchase agreement or the LOI. Go through, look at their basis, and do a net proceeds calculation down to the last dollar. Mm-hmm. So that confirming what we do, because we don't have all the information the tax preparer has. But in before you go and sign, they know that. You don't sign the purchase agreement, then go to the CPA, your tax preparer, and say, okay, I just sold my company for X. How much am I going to have in taxes? You had that experience, mm-hmm. and that's not fun.
Oh, I've had so many conversations where people say, sign the LOI and the purchase agreement. Now I want to do some tax planning.
No.
You got it backwards. Just no.
No.
Wrong. No. That is the wrong answer.
No. But that's when you engage at the right moment to say, the client's thinking about selling. Tell us what the net proceeds would be based on these facts.
So then we'll go back to, I want to make a comment and then you can comment on the not everything. But I, from a visionary entrepreneur, from specifically my perspective and my personal experience, all of the things we've been talking about, not necessarily the first part, which is a lot of like just breaking down the functions to give some context to everything else, but it's ideas and vision and strategies. And I have I've always had a very clear idea of what I wanted. And every time I meet an entrepreneur, they have these ideas that are great. And they just want to make sure that, like we talked about, that it's worth the wealth creation and that their time, energy, and money are going into things that progress them towards their goals. And everything that you've talked about in this last half of the interview about the CFO's role, they're holding that responsibility and stress and anxiety themselves. And that's what I swear half of this is one leg of the stool that just kills everybody, because they know that they need to do these things and they're just learning on the fly, stumbling through these things. So that's why I keep saying that's the kind of the blueprint manager, you know, like of like the plan and all these different components. And it's the fabric that glues it all together. So you can take that idea and it's actually realistic and you don't go bankrupt, don't have enough, you know, money or whatever it might be. But so that's what I meant by the quote unquote everything. I don't know what you're like, how.
It's just kind of the focal point. I mean, they're in a position to kind of have their tentacles in everything and you know, kind of make sure the process is followed. Where it becomes really important is in visionaries like you, you have 50 ideas. Mm-hmm. Well, how do you make choices about what to do? You know, and that's where having the right kind of information, having the right kind of budgeting, having the right kind of scenario planning to say, okay, if we elect scenario A, here's the result. Mm-hmm. B, here's the result. C, here's the result. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what the pros and cons. Then you get into some of the non-financial stuff. Is this advance our brand identity? Mm-hmm. Does this expand are we willing to take a hit for 2 years in order to expand geographically because it'll pay off after the fact? When you can see the numbers, then it makes it, you can reach a better decision.
Yeah. And then it's like, then there's, like you said, the trade-offs, like, oh, I really want this strategy to take place. And then the follow-up question is, are you willing to not take any distributions for the next 2 years? I don't know. Yeah. That's my choice, but at least I have the information. I think what happens so much, Pat, is like,
as opposed to doing it and then being told there's no money.
Right. Well, and that's a good lead-in as I was about to wrap up, is like so many times, I mean, I've experienced it where you hear no from your CPA, your attorney, your banker,
your account.
No, you hear no. And it's because these people, they want to, I truly believe that advisors want what's best for business owners. They just don't have the plan or the information. So it has to be a guessing game, which doesn't work for anybody. So they're essentially a bunch of advisors trying to mitigate the guessing game. And the owner, who can just typically a visionary, is seeing the picture clearly and has, and it's almost like people are speaking different languages. And that's the, it's like the translator between the vision and the practicality. And I think then what you were talking about, the trade-offs, it's such a different experience. First of all, the anxiety goes way down. Cindy and Rob Dubé both were on our podcast, both clients of ours, and talking about this experience. And it's like, anxiety just goes way down because it's like, no one's going to tell me, no, they're just going to give me my trade-offs and it's up to me to make the decision.
Yeah. And again, coming back to where we started, your ownership and your company is maybe, and most likely, your largest financial asset. Being intentional about the decisions you make and the approach you have to put yourself in a situation where you have the best shot of growing that value, the value of that asset. That's what it's all about. And being organized in a way and having the expertise available to you in a way to, that puts you on that path. To me, that's what it's all about when you need to do that.
So, as a way of wrapping up, I wanted to, I got a question for you instead of what is intentional, because you've been on too many times now to keep hammering you and trying to switch the definition is, for all the business owners that are listening in and entrepreneurs and CEOs or the different leadership team, and they're going, shit, that's a lot of finance and that's a lot of, I got a stomach ache because I don't know any of the stuff. Like what would be your parting words for someone that's got anxiety because of this conversation?
Based on a lot of experience, and dealing with a lot of business owners, some who knew a lot about finance, who were accountants, trained accountants, to people who were, no offense, marketing. I mean, not trained accountants, marketing people.
I was a copier salesperson. So, okay, come on, it's okay.
With a little bit of financial literacy, a business owner can understand what they need to understand about this. And when they develop a true trusting relationship with the CFO, that gives them what they need. For all of our clients, for all the information I give them that maybe sometimes seems overwhelming, there's 20 times more of that information behind the scenes that they never see. But being able to deliver the information in a way and having, because business owners are smart. They've worked hard. They started a business. They've gotten to where they are. Give them the right information and they get to make the decision they want to make as long as they understand all the implications of it. It is not that hard. I know sometimes it seems overwhelming, and sometimes there's a lot of cleanup to do when we start with a client that seems a little bit painful. But when you get to the end and they understand how to read the three statements, and they understand how to interpret the metrics that we're giving them, and they understand, you know, the difference between how much debt you put down on a deal when you're in an M&A deal, how much you finance, and how much you pay, and what's the IRR. Today, that conversation with that business owner, it wasn't painful. He wasn't struggling. He knew exactly what we were talking about. You get to that point where you've got that relationship. You haven't had to spend a whole bunch of mental calories on thinking about the details. You're thinking about what's important. Mm-hmm. And you can ask yourself, if I do this, is it going to help me grow the value of my business?
Well, that sounds like something that is fun to focus on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Pat, for coming back on. And we will be tuning in for another episode here pretty soon.
Okay.
All right. Well, I hope we didn't geek out too much on everybody. And we hopefully shed some light into an area that I think is very ambiguous for people in the finance and accounting departments. Like, what does everybody do? What functions need to be done no matter what size of the company? And then how do we build those building blocks up so we can look through the front windshield, focus on growing value, focus on hitting the cash flow that we need, the EBITDA that we want, the distributions, the taxes, and how do we view all the choices we have within this decision framework so the trade-offs are visible and you know the risks that you're taking and you have calculated guesses and calculated strategies that you're marching towards. My biggest recommendation would be is go check out the Intentional Growth Financial Checklist. And all it is we show you what is necessary to organize your financials in a way to view it as a financial asset. And the results page, Pat and I have got 5 videos where we break down and we show a case study of what good looks like. So if you're interested in the topics we're talking about and what data the CFO is organizing and how they're organizing it so you can get the answers to the questions we're talking about, go check out the Intentional Growth Financial Checklist. And with that being said, check out next episode where we're going to be, stay tuned for next episode, I should say, where we're going to be breaking down the fractional market. Why does it exist? And we're going to be talking to some people that have had the experience and what their success looks like. Thanks everybody for tuning in, and I will see you next week.